Good afternoon. I think we should start the talk now. This afternoon I like to continue our talk on the practice. In our meditation we repeat two words, sati and sampajanya. Mindfulness and clear comprehension. These two words go hand in hand. One does not make any sense without the other, and therefore they are very important terms. Sati, we have given a very brief account of sati, mindfulness. As we have mentioned, mindfulness itself is a very big subject. For our practical purpose for now, until of course later on you can get a detailed understanding of mindfulness, for now, we must remember mindfulness is present moment awareness of reality. When we say present moment awareness, we mean not thinking of the past or the future. And awareness is non-conceptual, non-verbal, direct seeing with mental eye. What we see in, what we see directly with mental eye is something that undeniable, irrefutable, universal truth that is impermanence. Things are permanently impermanent. If you ask anything permanent, that is impermanent. The entire teachings of the Buddha is based on this principle. Many people, even philosophers, talk about impermanence, but they have done nothing with it. They just knew intuitively, logically, they knew things are impermanent. But that appeared to them as a mere passing phenomenon. They didn't do anything about it. The Buddha is the only one who used it to build his entire teaching on impermanence. He started saying that things are unsatisfactory. Things are unsatisfactory because things are impermanent. Yada nicchaṁ tan dukkhaṁ. That which is impermanent is unsatisfactory. Not purely because they are impermanent, they are unsatisfactory. If because things are impermanent, they are unsatisfactory, then we can never end unsatisfactoriness. Because impermanent is permanent. If impermanent is permanently impermanent, how can we get rid of unsatisfactoriness, suffering, right? We cannot do that. So, there is a missing link which we must put together. It is not purely because of things are impermanent we experience unsatisfactoriness. You know, if we say purely because of impermanence we experience unsatisfactoriness, even the Buddha wouldn't have eliminated unsatisfactoriness, because even after attainment of enlightenment, impermanent continued to be impermanent. When Buddha was going to pass away, Venerable Ananda said, Ananda was mourning, weeping, crying. Then Buddha called Ananda and said to Ananda, Ananda, why do you cry? Have you forgotten? For the last 25 years you served me with metta in thoughts, words and deeds. So you have done a lot of merits, but you seem to have forgotten something. That is, all these years, 45 years, I have been teaching that everything is impermanent. Then how is it possible that I would not be impermanent? I am also impermanent. So if the Buddha himself was impermanent, if the impermanent itself is unsatisfactory, Buddha has not ended unsatisfactoriness. What it means is, it is not purely because of things are impermanent we experience suffering, but because of our attachment to impermanent things. It is the attachment that we eliminate, the greed, clinging, craving for impermanent things, we eliminate. Impermanent things continue to be impermanent. We can do nothing about it. But we can do something about our attachment to impermanent things. So, unsatisfactoriness or suffering is, people try to define suffering in many different ways. They don't like the word suffering. They say stress reduction, stress this, stress that. You know, that is just scratching the surface. Unsatisfactoriness or suffering is much, much deeper than that. Suffering is, in our definition, suffering is insatiability of desire is suffering. Insatiability of desire. Desire can never be satiated, never be satisfied. Being unable to satisfy desire, we suffer. You can call it stress or what do you call pain, disappointment, unsatisfaction, many words you can use. But underneath all of them, what suffering means, being unable to satisfy our desire. You think about it. Try to satisfy desire. We do thousands of things to satisfy desire and stop one day and ask, am I happy now? Answer will come, not yet. Why not? Because there is more desire. Then you keep trying and trying and trying and trying, and after years later you will ask, am I happy now? Answer will be, not yet. Why? Desire is there. So long as this desire is there, there is no satisfaction, no happiness. So sati is seeing this connection between impermanence and unsatisfactoriness. Mindfulness sees this happening every fraction of a second. We experience this unsatisfactoriness. We fight, we quarrel, we argue, we do thousands of things without addressing the core question, the fundamental question, that is desire. People may not like even to hear that. They will ask, argue with us. How can we live without desire? They ask. Surely you cannot live without desire. Desire also has two sides, wholesome desire and unwholesome desire. What is unwholesome desire? Unwholesome desire is desire to perpetuate desire. unwholesome desire, desire to increase desire. What is wholesome desire? Wholesome desire is desire to be desireless. Desire to be desireless is a wholesome desire. When we are mindful, we can see how we can make the distinction between wholesome desire and unwholesome desire. When we practice mindfulness of breathing, there is mindfulness of breathing is divided into four categories. They are called tetrads. Each category has four pairs and altogether 32 individuals, but 16 pairs divided into four groups. Last group begins with seeing impermanence one breathe in and seeing impermanence one breathe out. Anicca anupassi passasissami. Seeing impermanence one breathe in, seeing impermanence one breathe out. When one breathes in and out, seeing impermanence, not seeing with the eyes, but mental eye, experiencing impermanence, we breathe in, experiencing impermanence, we breathe out. As we pay attention to our breath and breathe, you will not see one fraction of a second static, unchanging moment of your breath, or your feelings, or your perceptions, or attention, or consciousness. Everything is in a state of flux. Friends, this is not just mere speaking rhetoric or philosophical jargon. This is the fact, the truth. We experience it. When we experience the flux, change, continuous change, then there arises an insight called not clinging. It's called viraga. Viraga anupassi asesi sami sikkhati. Viraga anupassi passi sami sikkhati. Seeing non-clinging, breathing in, seeing non-clinging, we breathe out. Friends, we do not make any attempt not to cling. We don't deliberately, we do not make any attempt to prevent the mind from clinging. Mind itself does this function. Mind itself, since mind sees that the mind cannot hold on to anything, cling to anything, glue to anything, because things are changing so quickly. What the mind does is, let it happen. Let it happen. The moment the mind tries to stop change, clinging deliberately, there will be a friction. You see, there are two forces. One is a very great force of changing, other is a very great force of clinging. These two never match, never meet. We end up in frustration. It is just like trying to balance a mustard seed on the tip of a moving needle. When you sew, needle is moving so fast, and you try to balance a mustard seed on the tip of the needle. Can you do that? No. It is changing so quickly, nothing you can stop. So mind sees this nature. Mind sees this impermanent, this changing so quickly. And any time desire arises to cling to it, before desire arises, it changed in a very fundamental way, changing. Once it is changed and disappeared, it disappeared forever. It was very interesting. When you see, for instance, the breath, we breathe in, breathe out, once it is gone, it's gone. There is nowhere to find it. We have experienced certain feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. While they are arising, we experience, when they are gone, they are gone. We can never find them. We don't know where they are gone. Thoughts arise. And while thoughts are arising, and we are playing with those thoughts, thoughts themselves are while changing, we play with them, and when they are gone forever. Perceptions, consciousness arise very quickly and pass away. Disappear, never to find again. So this is what is called nirodha, cessation, cease. We experience it when we pay mindful attention to the breathing, feeling, perceptions, thoughts, consciousness, whatever arises. What we do normally when things arise, we add more things deliberately, we continue to multiply them and imagine and visualize, fantasize and keep playing with all these things. When we pay mindful attention, we don't do any of those things. So that is the function of sati. Meaning, sati is participatory observer. Mindfulness participate in whatever is happening. At the same time, it observes, becomes aware of what is happening. It doesn't do anything by just becoming aware. And registering what is happening, registering in the mind. And that registration is called sati or memory. We memorize, we remember. A moment ago something happened, it disappeared, and we can never find it. Next moment something happened, disappeared, next moment. This morning, this afternoon, yesterday and so forth. Whatever we experience, then and there it disappears. So, mind register this natural occurrence, natural phenomena in the mind. That is the memory part of sati. Sati has two sides. One is seeing it as it is happening, other is remembering. Sati means remembering. We remember many things. We will remember text, we will remember facts, we remember figures, we remember telephone numbers, names, places, seeing, so forth and so on. But we don't remember this phenomenon of impermanence, arising, falling, passing away and disappearing. We don't register it. But when you pay mindful attention, the mindfulness registers all of them in our mind. Then the last of that category is abandoning. Let it happen. Abandoning means not having any hope to get them back. Abandon, gave up. Once the sensation desire disappears, mind is not going after that, not wishing, not willing, not expecting it to get back. Let it go. That way, every moment we learn to release the tension by letting go. Letting go. Of course, we have to let go of things. We talk in meditation, let go of things, let go of things. We should let go of something, and we should not let go of some other things. If we let go of everything, we are just throwing the baby with bathwater. We don't keep anything. We don't develop anything. We don't have anything at the end. Nothing. We sat many hours, we get up. What have you got? Nothing. But we must keep something. What do we keep? We keep this memory, this experience, and we keep this in mind to let go of our greed, hatred, delusion, those are things we let go. Not letting go of letting go. You see? Keep the letting go with us and let go of others. You know, it is not a play on words, but that is the truth. Desire we have to let go, but we don't try to hold back something. We don't let go of things with string attached so that we can pull them back. Not that kind of letting go. So, the mental deep unsatisfactoriness, suffering can be overcome by this kind of true mindfulness training. That is sati in short. Then sampajanya, the other word, I want to explain these two words today. Clear comprehension. Clear comprehension, the Buddha used clear comprehension in this discourses, Four Foundations of Mindfulness and other places, but he has not classified them on the, but the commentaries classified them. According to their classification, there are four kinds of clear comprehensions. Clear comprehension of the purpose, clear comprehension of the domain, clear comprehension of suitability, and clear comprehension of non-delusion. I hope I try to cover these four in this talk, because these four, each of them has very deep meaning. Clear comprehension of the purpose. Why we meditate? We must clearly understand why we meditate. To improve our business, to make more profit, or to become more attractive, or to find our partners, good partners. Why do we meditate? So we have to ask this first question. Why do we meditate? We meditate for five purposes. Purpose number one, for the purification of mind. Purification of mind. Because all our problems stem from impure state of mind. All our solace, comfort, happiness stem from pure state of mind. You can see the logic in it. Why we want to purify the mind? That is the instrument, the source of all our happiness and unhappiness. We cannot ask anybody to make us happy. Natang mata pita kaira anyeva pijnayitika samma panihitam cittam seyyasonam tatokare, Buddha said. Disodisang yantam kaira verivapana verpana michcha panihitam cittam seyyasonam tatokare. These two things he must remember. That means not any worst enemy can do so harm to us as our ill-directed mind can do, confused mind can do. No, so much good that even our parents can do to us as our clear, pure state of mind can do to us. We expect our parents love us, they do everything when we are very little to make us happy. They cannot make us happy. They may do something materially, but they cannot make our mind happy. Similarly, no enemy can do anything to hurt us as our mind hurts us. Enemy can hurt us periodically, today, tomorrow, one day, and another day, and so forth, you know, periodically. But ill-directed mind, 24 hours can bombard us. 24 hours, even when we are in sleep. Therefore, we have to purify the mind. The purification of mind is one purpose of meditation. There is a book called Visuddhi Magga, this thick book written by Venerable Buddha Ghosa, explaining seven steps of the purification based on one sutta in Majjhima Nikaya called Sattavinita Sutta. So that book explains how to purify the mind. If you want to learn it, read that book. It takes quite a while. It's very boring, but you can, if you have, if you put your heart and mind, you can read it. Anyway, purification of mind is one purpose of meditation, because we want to live peacefully, happily. Then overcoming sorrow, lamentation is the second purpose. You know, whenever we have sorrow and lamentation, we ask ourselves, why? Why do we lament? Because we lost something or someone we loved, we cling to, we are attached to. So naturally, when there is an attachment, we expect to be sorrowful. There's no any question about it. So, as I said, the suffering comes from attachment. Attachment to what? Impermanent things. So we meditate to remove our attachment to anything impermanent. If you find something permanent, by all means be attached to it. Until such time, you may try not to become attached. It doesn't mean that we should not have our friendship, relationship, association, you know, being affectionate, being friendly with each other. Those things are promoted, should be promotable. But we can do all these things without attachment, knowing that they all will pass away, disappear, impermanent. So we are impermanent, they are impermanent, and this, within this impermanent existence, we experience impermanent pleasure, impermanent joy. And so the basis is the understanding, insight, wisdom of impermanence. Within that framework, we can have pleasure, joy, and so forth. But never forget that they are impermanent. The moment you forget and cling, then we are in trouble. So the third purpose is to overcome pain and grief. Pain and grief. Pain arises physically, physical pain. Grief arises also due to various kind of clinging to various things. Grief, sorrow, lamentations last not as long as grief. Grief lasts much, much longer in our life. And therefore, in order to overcome that, we practice meditation. That is the fourth purpose, the third purpose. Fourth purpose is to tread the path of Noble Eightfold Path. Nyaya Sadhigamaya, Buddha said. Nyaya Sadhigamaya. Nyaya means the method, system. We want to fall into the system, go along with the system. What is the system? The system of Noble Eightfold Path. In order to fall into Noble Eightfold Path, we practice meditation, because Noble Eightfold Path itself is meditation. The entire Noble Eightfold Path is called Bhavetabha, to be cultivated, to be developed, to be practiced as meditation. All the every step of the Noble Eightfold Path to be practiced.
What is noble? It means, I'm sorry.
Noble Eightfold Path.
Noble Eightfold Path.
You have heard it before? No.
Sorry.
How come? Noble Eightfold Path is the core teaching of the Buddha, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, starting with right understanding, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration. These are the eight. Anyway, so when we practice meditation, we naturally merge with the Noble Eightfold Path. It's called Nyaya Adhigama, means realization. We realize the entire Noble Eightfold Path when we meditate. And the last purpose of meditation is to attain liberation, called Nibbana Satchikriyaya, to realize Nibbana, the final goal of Buddhism. These are the five purposes of meditation. So, among in the clear comprehension, number one clear comprehension is realizing, understanding the purpose of our practice. Sattaka, the purpose. Then second is suitability. Whenever when we meditate, we must ask the question, is this practice suitable for that attainment? We must ask. We are practicing mindfulness, we must ask, is mindfulness suitable for attaining, for gaining these five purposes? Yes, it is suitable. In the name of mindfulness, if we do something else, that will not be suitable. In the name of mindfulness, people say, this day the word mindfulness is used so casually, so lightly, sometimes even without any meaning. I am mindful about the current politics. How can you attain enlightenment because being mindful of the current politics? Mindful of current economy, environment, or so on. I am mindful about the Vietnam War, Afghan War, Pakistan War, whatever war. I am mindful about it. Somebody asked me, when I was walking, somebody came to meditation and he asked me, can I shoot my gun with mindfulness? Another man literally came to our place and he said, I came to mindfulness practice. I want to learn. I want to learn how to concentrate, shoot the target correctly. I don't want to miss my target. I came to meditate, learn how to concentrate, and then I shoot my target without missing it. So you can see the way how people use the word mindfulness. So loosely, so casually, so even without thinking. Of course, that can be a wrong mindfulness, not the right mindfulness. For the right mindfulness, we have to have all these other seven factors of the Noble Eightfold Path. For the right mindfulness, there must be right understanding, right thinking, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right concentration. All those seven must merge with, converge with mindfulness. Only then that it becomes, it is a wholesome practice, not unwholesome practice. So we must, whenever we practice mindfulness meditation, we must ask, is this suitable? Is this the way we have to practice mindfulness? Is this the correct way to practice mindfulness? My understanding of mindfulness is correct? That is called the clear comprehension of suitability. We must clearly understand what we are doing, why we are doing it. Does it fit my attainment, my purpose? The third clear comprehension is called domain. Domain, the field. What is our domain? Our domain, the field of mindfulness, is not out there in the world. Although we talk about, overcoming grief and covetousness in the world, when you read in books, you can see, to overcome greed and covetousness, abhijja domanassam, vinaya loke abhijja domanassam, by overcoming greed and covetousness in the world. Does that mean that we are going out to remove the covetousness of everybody in their mind and for us to meditate? The world there does not refer to the world over there outside with the earth and water and so forth, but the world there means this world, our own world. In Sanyutta Nikaya there is a discourse called Rohitasa Sutta. In Rohitasa Sutta, Buddha said, in this one fathom body with this consciousness is the world I declare. I declare the world, this five, one fathom body with its consciousness, the world, beginning of world, end of world, and the path leading to the end of world. That is our own body and mind. So that our domain is nothing but our own five aggregates. Form, feeling, perception, thoughts, and consciousness. These are the aggregates. This is our material. This is our field, the domain. This is our sort of laboratory. This is our laboratory. We have to do our research in this laboratory. We cannot borrow others' laboratory, although we do it more often. go out and think about other people. But the Buddha, time and again, he insisted that we should focus our mind on our own five aggregates. That is our field, domain. Buddha said, any moment we go out of our domain, we will be trapped by Mara, the evil one. Buddha gave many, many beautiful similes. One simile is like a fairy tale, but it conveys the meaning. Very beautiful, I like that. A little story, like Cinderella story, but it has a, you know, meaning. Buddha says there was quail. Quail is a very tiny little bird. Was sitting on a big clot of mud in the sun, basking sun. And then a big hawk swooped down, came and grabbed him. When he grabbed this little quail, he began to cry. He said, oh, today is my unlucky day. Had I been in my own domain, this hawk wouldn't have been a match in fight. But to do, I'm so unhappy today, unlucky. He came and got me. He was crying. Then the hawk asked him, this fellow, his hawk, you know, it's a big fellow. He was not insulted. He thought, this little fellow in my mouth is boasting about fighting, telling that I am not a match in a fight. Then he asked him, where is your domain? He said, that newly plowed field with big clot of mud, that is my field, my ancestral home. Oh, is it so? I can take you there and put you there. So the hawk brought him and dropped him there. And then said, hawk said, but tomorrow I come and get you. So, the quail, without saying anything, stayed there. The hawk flew away. Next day, the quail came and stood on the big clod of mud. And the hawk came. As hawk was coming closer, this fellow immediately hid under big clod of mud. The hole was very tiny, he couldn't hide there. He hid there. The hawk came and looked around, he couldn't find him. And he was so utterly disappointed, he flew away. The Buddha said, had this quail been in his own ancestral domain, he wouldn't have been caught by the hawk. So that is your safe ground. That is your, you have your sort of, what do you call, territorial integrity, so to say. This is your territory. In your territory, you are the master. You can fight. But if you go out, you are insecure, unsafe. Anything can happen, Buddha said. Similarly, our domain is our own body and mind. When we practice mindfulness, we never think of anything external. We always, because external things we cannot experience as clearly as we experience internal things. When feeling arises, it is so close, we feel it, we participate in it, we know it, we experience it. When thought arises, we know it, we feel it. Consciousness, ideas, and breath, whatever is happening to us, we know it because it is happening in us, to us, within us. So that is our domain. We must clearly understand our domain and pay total attention to them to understand, to gain this insight. If you go out, try to get involved in various external things, then we will be in trouble, Buddha said. And the fourth clear comprehension is the clear comprehension of non-delusion. Non-delusion, that is even more difficult to understand, because it is, when you are deluded, how do you know that you are deluded? Right? Sometimes when people are deluded, they think they are enlightened. I mean, they even lose their common sense. If they lose their common sense, how can they understand that they are deluded, and how can they get out of it? And therefore, even understanding delusion as delusion is very important thing. And Buddha said, Yo balo manyati balyang pandito apiton, so balo cha panditamani sarve balo tu uchati. If a fool thinks that he is a fool, for that matter he is a wise person. If a fool thinks that he is wise, for that reason he is a fool. So when we are deluded and think that we are enlightened, for that reason we are more deluded. So we have to understand that what our delusion is. Sometimes these things I have seen, probably you also might have seen. Some people, when they come to meditation, they think, they lift their hands. They lift their hand, I have seen it, lift their hand and then drop it, and then lift it again. Why they lift their hand and drop? Because first time they lift it and they forgot to be mindful. So they drop it and lift the hand with mindfulness. There is a deluded practice. Also sometimes people, even we find in even in commentaries, a monk was walking some distance and all of a sudden he walked back. He was going somewhere and stopped and he went back. And somebody asked him, Sir, why did you go back? He said, I was unmindful, so I want to pick up my mindfulness from there. As you, this is what I call lost and found mindfulness. He forgot to be mindful when he was there, and he does not know where he forgot his, where he dropped his mindfulness. But he wanted to pick it up from somewhere. So he walked back and started. So we have to be mindful all the time. Suppose you are eating. You ate maybe 5 minutes. Then all of a sudden you remember, I forgot to be mindful. So what do you do with the food that you ate? To be mindful, to practice mindfulness. So people can become so silly because they're confused, they don't understand what non-delusion means. It is not some material thing that you drop somewhere and go and pick it up. It is a mental state. When we have forgotten to be mindful, we must be mindful of the fact that we have forgotten to be mindful. That very instant we start becoming mindful. You meditated 20 minutes without mindfulness. All of a sudden you remember, I have been daydreaming, I was thinking my home, my kitchen, my grocery shopping, my shopping list, my telephone calls and so forth and so on. I was not mindful. Then what do? That instant you forget about everything that you have done, start being mindful from that time onward. So, clear comprehension of non-delusion is this kind of delusion. It is not so totally, you know, this psychological delusion, some people have, which they need a lot of treatment. This delusion is you do not understand what mindfulness is. That's called delusion. Because of that delusion, you practice it incorrectly. Therefore, we have to understand what delusion is. Delusion is not understanding what we are supposed to do and doing something wrong, like this picking up lost mindfulness. So these are the four kind of clear comprehensions. So on the one hand, we have to be very mindful. In order to practice mindfulness more meaningfully, we have to have a clear comprehension, clear understanding. Now, clear understanding of the purpose has been, in many places, has been explained, but not convincing. These explanations are not convincing explanations, so sensible explanations. So we have to, even that we have to understand properly, clearly. So with this type of two aspects, we practice meditation. First is mindfulness, what mindfulness is, and then clear comprehension, what clear comprehension is. With these two, we can do our meditation practice. So with this, I want to conclude this talk, and from now, in maybe 10 minutes break, we start our interviews, which will go on till